Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including, I'm proud to say now, 184 of the best stations in the U.S., on Saturday, June 16th, 2012. This is episode 883. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try it free for 30 days today, plus get double storage when you go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code TECHGUY. And by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. Well, hello. How are you? Good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk tech. Computers and the internet. Cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. We're working on our new website. And Josh Windisch, who's going to be responsible for maintaining that site, and I were going over what the topics could be, would be, might be. Because we want to have like a little topic, you know, when you search the site, of course you could search by any word, but we want to have a little topic drop down that you pick and you choose a topic. So the idea is to have 10 or 12 or something kind of topics that cover everything. Now, that's not easy. That's not easy. We got hardware, we got software, and then I thought, well, hardware is not enough because you probably should say tablets, so we got tablets. And then certainly you got to talk about cell phones, or I use mobile phones because internationally they don't really know what cell phones are. They call them mobiles or mobile phones. So I thought, well, everybody knows what a mobile phone is, so I'll call them mobile phones. And then security and privacy. I thought, well, we'll make that one because it's kind of related, security and privacy. Then I thought, well, do I want a category called printers? No. So I have a peripherals, but I don't even do it. Does anybody even know these days in this day and age if I say peripheral? That goes back to the early days of the PC. You know, printers, external hard drives, mice, keyboards. Those are peripherals. You know, they're kind of on the periphery of your computer. So I don't know about that word. I'm going to go with it until we come up with something better. I don't want to just do printers. Let's see. What else did I have? I have to look at the email because I forgot. It's such a long list. Peripheral. Yeah, Dr. Mom says, yeah, peripheral. Something outside the main area, on the periphery. Oh, internet and web. Now, I put and web and I put internet because there's, you know, I mean, from a purely, to be purely pedantic, there's a difference. I think a lot of people think the web is the internet. But, you know, if you're talking about something that doesn't use the worldwide web technology, like, say, internet chat, then that's the internet. So I thought, well, internet and web. We'll put those two together. Networking. Sure, we do a lot. Gaming. Yeah, sometimes. Home theater, for sure. In fact, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert's coming up. 33 after the hour. I have to have a category for him. Then photography got a little complicated because it's photography, but should photography and video be in the same category? I guess so. I guess they're related. And then I threw in a couple of extra, just, you know, media. Because people are always asking me what's the best microphone, stuff like that. Business. Oh, cars. Good point, Nightstar. Cars. Got to put cars these days are high tech, aren't they? Yeah. Anyway, we're gonna stick. I'll add cars, and we'll stick with those. Oh, boy. We're going to have a tag cloud, too, so you can do tags, and we'll have searching. That site is almost done. I think we're going to, in the next 2 weeks, open it to a small group of you in the public, probably people who visit the chat room, the regulars. And then certainly within the next month and a half, we'll have that in open. And it's going to be nice. We'll have commenting and stuff so you can have your say. When I say something, you go, no, Leo, that's wrong. You have your say. So Apple's big announcement was this week, the WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference. They kind of, before the conference, I went on record saying, I think it's going to be I call it the Summer of Tim, the biggest launch ever for Apple. Not quite. We knew they would talk because they're talking to developers, the people who write the software for their stuff. We knew they'd talk about their operating systems, OS X on the Macintosh and iOS 6 on the iPhone and iPad. And they did. Lots of nice new features there. But they did something else they rarely do at a developers conference. They announced new hardware. I predicted they would, but I thought they'd probably maybe do a little more than they did. I thought, gosh, you know, they have basically four big product lines. They have the laptops. They have the iMacs, the consumer desktops. They have the Mac Pros, which are the high-end desktops. And then they have iOS stuff, iPhones and iPads. Those are kind of the four big categories. I guess I'd have to put the Mac Mini in a desktop category. That's kind of like the least expensive Mac there is. So I was sure, in fact, I think the rumors were strong that the four out of the five categories would have new products, that there'd be new Mac iMacs, new Mac Pros, new Mac Minis, new Mac what else do that? What else is there? iMacs? Oh, Mac Pros, Mac Minis, iMacs. So they thought that maybe three out of the four would be updated. Only the laptops are updated. Only the laptops. They didn't mention iPhone 5, of course. They'll do that in the fall. They don't want to kill sales for the current iPhone. And they didn't surprisingly say anything about the Mac Pros, although they did a kind of a teensy-weensy update without mentioning it. Not the update everybody wants with the Macintosh Pros. Everybody wants to put the Thunderbolt port on there. And Apple did not, which in my mind indicates Thunderbolt is not going as well as Apple had hoped. In fact, Apple announced updated Mac Pros, updated MacBook Airs, and then the biggest announcement, and this is the one that kind of threw everybody, was this kind of, I don't know, I'm going to call it the MacBook Elite. That's not what Apple wants to call it. The MacBook Elite. And boy, this has turned out to be quite controversial. So I ordered one, of course. I'm getting it Monday. We'll see. They're in very limited supply. I think the wait now is 6 weeks if you didn't order right away. And I think that's a good thing because I'm going to say the jury's still out on whether to order this. So let's talk about what are they calling it? Just the MacBook Pro with Retina display. It's the Elite. First of all, starting price is $2,200. That's a lot these days for a notebook computer. That's an awful lot. You have the biggest thing that you'll notice is the Retina display. And this is the highest resolution display, I think, of any notebook out there right now. Is that wrong? The Samsung S9 is not that high. I think it's the highest of any notebook. At least, let's talk about pixels per inch. It is a 15.4-inch display, and it has 2880 horizontally. That's 2,880 dots across. That's a lot. And 1,440 dots top to bottom. That's a lot. We're talking essentially doubling the resolution of the existing MacBooks. So on a 5.4-inch or 15.4-inch display, let me just do the calculations here. That is a little over 200 pixels per inch. I'm sorry, 2880 by 1800. Thank you. I misspoke. It's 220 pixels per inch. I'm looking at the pixel per inch calculator. Now remember, for a long time, laser printing was 300 dots per inch. That's really, you know, high quality crisp printing that you could get really close to. The iPhone 4S is higher than that, but of course you hold it closer. So what Apple means by a Retina display is something that you can't see the pixels, the dots on the screen, at normal viewing distances. This qualifies. In fact, those who have seen it say it actually makes the web and some applications look bad because it's so high quality. You could see ick. You can see icky stuff. So the Retina display is the biggest story. 2880 80 by 1800. Okay, that's a pretty big story. And then it's thinner. It's about the height of two USB ports. USB 3 for the first time on any Macintosh. And that's because they get it for free with this new Intel chipset. They're using the Ivy Bridge chipset, which is a nice, fast chipset. They also add two Thunderbolt ports and an HDMI port. That's the good. But let me talk about the bad and the ugly when I come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I talked about the good on the new MacBook Pro with Retina display, the MacBook Elite. Let's talk about the bad. Besides the price, by the way, that's the base price. And I think you're going to spend more than the base price, and I'll tell you why in a second. So, you know, on the face of it, really some neat specs, including, and Apple's spent some time talking about this, asymmetric fans. So what Apple said, Apple said that normal fans that are symmetric make white noise. They make noise in all frequencies. And so their engineering team designed these fans with asymmetric blades. It's it's not wobbly. It still spins, you know, symmetrically. But the blades, it has different blades that are asymmetric. And by doing so, they're able to tune the fan's frequency to a single area. I believe they said this. And so they could then treat the case to block that frequency. The other way around? Okay. See, you could tell I don't get it. And by the way, I've talked to people who say it sounds the same to me. So it's like the propellers on a nuclear submarine, says Texas Mike. That's right, because you don't want cavitation. Submarines make noise. They cavitate. They make air bubbles as they spin their propellers. So to run silent, they modify the... I see. Okay, so Scott Michaud is saying, no, it's the other way around. They modified the blades to not whine. So no more whining, which would be same. That makes more sense. Same frequency. It's more like a... You know, silly. Silly, silly, silly. More soothing fan noise. There are two of them because this thing is hot. And when you make something this thin... There's some things you have to do because it gets hot. And the Ivy Bridge processor, hot. You've got a quad-core 2.7 gigahertz processor in there. That's hot. I'm sorry, 2.3 gigahertz. 2.6 if you upgrade to the i7, 2.3. But it could turbo boost if you need the speed to 3.3 or 3.6 gigahertz respectively. That's hot. Then you got 8 gigs of high-speed memory. You've got a solid-state storage. You've got two graphics, the motherboard or Ivy Bridge graphics, the Intel HD Graphics 4000. And then the pretty nice NVIDIA GT 650 with a gig of its own memory. So this is nice. And then you have lots of batteries because, of course, that screen just kills batteries. Now, iFixit.com, which is, I love these guys. And we've talked to Kyle Weens of iFixit, and it's a really neat site, iFixit.com. And what they specialize is when new stuff comes out, they call themselves the free repair manual. They take it apart, and then they see how you could possibly repair it. And they put repair manuals online, and then they make their money, and they're doing quite well by selling the hardware that you might need to fix it. It's a really nice site. I'm a big fan. They deserve the attention, and they of course immediately tore down. I don't know where they got it. They tore down a MacBook Retina, and they have given it a repairability score, and I think they might be generous here, of 1 out of 10, the least repairable notebook ever made. Why? Well, it's all glued in. It uses proprietary screws, so you have to go out and buy a special screwdriver. Apple does that all the time. That's not unusual. And of course, iFixit too, so I sell those screwdrivers. The memory is soldered onto the motherboard, so when you order it, you better order the right amount of RAM because you ain't upgrading it. They've glued the batteries in. And they, as they did with the iPad, they glued the LCD panel to the lid. It's all one piece. In other words, this is not repairable. Now, a couple of things this raises. Now, I understand why Apple did it. It depends on how, you know, cynical one is. On the one hand, you could say, well, in order to make it that thin, and it is thin, you have to jam everything in. This is the way to make it more thin, more efficient. And so I understand. I mean, these are the compromises you have to make. I mean, look at the iPad. On the other hand, we've never had, for instance, a laptop that's impossible to replace the battery. Now, these lithium-ion batteries, Apple says you could charge them 1,000 times before they die. That means if you charge your laptop every day, do not expect more than 2.5 years. After that, it won't charge, and you have to bring it back to Apple, who will charge $199 for the fix. Oh, and as iFixit or somebody pointed out, you better not have anything private on that hard drive, because if it dies and you can't get to the hard drive, you won't be able to erase it before you bring it in. So this is a disposable laptop. If the screen breaks, you can't replace the LCD. You have to replace the lid. You have to. So when I talk about the price, $2,199, $2,200, better add in their extended warranty, their AppleCare, because this is, I don't usually buy these, and I don't usually recommend extended warranties because, you know, it's a profit center for the company. I prefer to self-insure. But since you cannot fix anything, you cannot upgrade anything, and your batteries will die in a few years, $350 for the extended warranty seems to me a necessity. So now we have a $2,550 laptop. Now it really is kind of expensive. In fact, it's very expensive. No optical drive on this. No Ethernet port. You have to buy a little $20 dongle if you want to use Ethernet. Otherwise, you're stuck with Wi-Fi. The MagSafe adapter, the power adapter, new, proprietary, of course. That means you either, as I did, buy a $10 adapter, or you have to just buy more power supplies if you want more than one, say one at work and one at home. The least repairable notebook ever, according to iFixit, and I would absolutely concur. Essentially, this is like the MacBook Air, the iPad, proprietary screws, lots of glues, expensive parts that have to be completely replaced if anything goes wrong, fused components that will likely break when a neighboring part must be removed. Basically, it is a sealed box. And even Apple, if you bring it in with a problem, will almost certainly just replace it, not fix it. That's kind of what they do these days anyway. So there's a major, I don't even know if this is recyclable. I've heard recyclers complain about the iPad because it's glued together and they don't have the fancy heat gun and they don't have the time to break it apart. So so that's the bad and the ugly. The good, it's an amazing step forward. The bad, it's very expensive, and ugly is it's not really fixable or upgradable. Now, here's an interesting question. Do we need upgradable computers anymore? Maybe Apple's saying, I think they are, hey, that's you geeks, want to upgrade stuff, want to fix stuff. Most people, it's an appliance. All right, your call's next. I want to know what you think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think it's very controversial. And I'm just kind of surprised. You know, Apple's promoted, in fact, at the keynote, how green this thing was. You know, no mercury, no arsenic. Straight to the landfill. So I guess that's probably an important thing, isn't it? You need the new Pentalobe screwdriver to open it up, which is just as well, because even if you open it up, I don't think you're really going to fix anything. Yeah, and I'm a sucker that bought one. What of it? There's that Pentalobe. It looks like a five-leaf clover, kind of. And, of course, iFixit does sell the special kit. they have like, putty knives. And these are all prying tools, so you could, because you have to pry at it. Hey, but good news, the battery contains no mercury, so just throw it out. It's okay. Hey, let me talk a little bit about ShareFile. I'm going to find that ShareFile graphic so I can put that up so you can remember the... There it is, ShareFile.com. ShareFile.com! So I got to show you. This is so cool. I set up my ShareFile, and it has... let me log in here. It has... see, it's got the big Twit logo on there. And I share files with people at Premiere and KFI and Twit, and I have my own file. This is so when I record a commercial, for instance, I'll put it on ShareFile, and these are all the commercials I recorded, and I'll send it to them. And it's so beautiful because you can get emailed whenever a file is uploaded, so I can allow uploading email whenever a file is downloaded. Watch this. So let's say I want to send. Let's go up one. And by the way, they have a desktop client as well. It automatically syncs. I'll show you the one on the Mac. So I can, you know, it's always synced. But I like to use the web-based component. So let's say, okay, I just did a whole bunch of new recordings. I'm going to send this to KFI. Press send. Now, there's a couple ways you can do it. It'll send an email. If you have the Outlook plugin, it'll do Outlook. Or I could say, hey, just give me a link. And then look at the settings. This is so cool. Email me when the Outlook has been downloaded. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. So that way I'll know who it was. I can expire the download after a day, week, month, year. I can say each user gets to download it once and only once. So you totally control this. Now when I click this, I'm going to get a link, which is how I often do this. And I put this link in the email. I'll show you. When they click that link, this is what it looks like. It's so slick. They don't have to have a ShareFile account. They don't have to sign up for anything. They can go into the recordings. They can click that link, and they say, click here to start your download. That'll download the whole folder, right? Isn't that sweet? And it has the logo and everything. This is ShareFile from Citrix. So they decided that they wanted to make a better way to share files. And ShareFile is so sweet. It's HIPAA compliant. They actually, if you look at they have customized solutions for over 30 industries, including things like government, medical, photography, real estate, video. You can have files of almost any size. You can completely control who gets the files. They got total support. It's just a really great way of doing this. I want you to try it free right now. Visit ShareFile.com. Files up to 10 gigabytes. It's encrypted. All that stuff. They've got a desktop widget, an Outlook plugin. Mobile tools, by the way. So you can see your ShareFile files on iOS, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows Phone. Here's the deal. Radio listeners at the top of the page, that's you, click that green button. The offer code is TechGuy. TechGuy. And you get a 30-day free trial. Select an industry. It doesn't really matter. You get all the same features. They just customize a little bit. And boom! Booyah! There are plans for a variety of different needs. Find out about this. If you have to share files with people, this is the way to do it. I no longer, you know, all those other ones. I don't use them. I use ShareFile.com. Try it today. You're going to like it. And once again, we thank Citrix. It's another Citrix product. We thank them for supporting the Tech Guy Show. So I'm looking, Anand Tech, I love Anand Shimpi. This guy is so cool. He is the ultimate geek. Started his site, AnandTech.com, when he was in high school. And I've talked to him ever since. And he's the sweetest guy and loves breaking it down, man. He is like the king of let's break it down. So he's done a very interesting study. We'll put a link in the show notes to this, of what the what happens with the MacBook, the new MacBook Pro Retina display, as you scale it. When you look, what's really interesting about this is they don't give you a resolution setting anymore. You know, most computers, you go into the display control panel or the system preference pane, and you can say, you know, this is I want this resolution. You could, and you would think, if you buy a, if you spend all that money on a laptop with a 2880 by 1800 display, that's the first thing you do. You're just going to set it to 2880 by 1800 and forget it. Well, in fact, no, you don't get that choice anymore. Now you get to choose larger text or more space. And you have a slider or a thing. There's actually five settings you click. And they have one in the middle that says best for Retina display. So the if you set it for the larger text, that's 1024 by 768. If you set it for what they call the optimal, guess what resolution it is? 1440 by 900. That's the same as your old MacBook Pro. It's half the native resolution. And the reason is if you set it to 2880, actually, they don't even let you do that. The highest you could set it at, the highest, is 1920 by 1200. And I tell you, if you're over 40, you're not going to be able to read a thing. It is, you can't set it to 2880 by 1800. So why, you may ask, why, Apple, do you have such a high-resolution display if you're not even letting people use the native resolution? Well, the reason is applications can be written to use the native resolution. And that's where you'll see the difference. For instance, probably the number one market for this is going to be the photographer who wants to see great detail as they edit their photographs. They'll benefit because Apple's own applications, iPhoto and Aperture, have already been updated to take advantage of the display. They will run, at least the pictures will run there, at 2880 by 1800. So that's the advantage. Applications have to be written, though, to take advantage of it. And they're, if they're not, you're going to want to stay at that smaller, what they call best for Retina display setting, is the same as your existing notebook, your 1440 by 900. Is it too late for me to return it? Yeah, it's on its way. Shipped from Shanghai on Thursday. It's in Anchorage, Alaska right now. On its way to my house. And Apple's already taken the money out of my checking account. So I guess I own one. I really would want... I think that the Apple's doing everybody a favor by saying, you can't buy it for 6 weeks. Or you can order it now, but it won't be available for 6 weeks. You really might want to think about this and wait till people see it. And maybe even go to an Apple store and try it before you buy. That'd be my recommendation. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I'm sorry. We were going to go to the phones, of course, and I do want to do that, but you know who's here? Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, joins us every week at this time to talk about home theater. And I finally did it, Scott. I broke down and I bought the surround sound speakers. For years, I've said no one needs surround sound speakers. And Scott said, oh, just try it. Just try it. And the people who make my speakers are having a massive sale, Emotiva. This is a little company, little U.S. company in, where are they? In Tennessee, I think?
I'm not sure where they are.
Somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're just a small company that really wants, is committed to making good quality stuff affordable. And they're having this big summer sale, and I broke down. It was like $200 off, so I broke down and I bought the surround sound speakers.
Good for you. I'm so happy to hear.
So you win, as always, Scott Wilkinson. Scott is the online editor for Home Theater Magazine, hometheater.com, and he joins us every week to talk about home theater. He also fills in for me whenever I take some time off. So what's on your mind today, Scotty? By the way, did you see Prometheus 3D?
No, I didn't.
And okay, so, you, okay, as long as I'm, you know, rolling over and playing dead, I I went to the 3D version.
Good for you. What'd you think?
Well, everybody probably listens to the show knows I hate 3D, right? I profess to hate 3D. And and I wanted to see this because I was told, A, it was shot on 3D, right?
Right.
And so, you know, it's native 3D. And B, that it wasn't very gimmicky. And I agree, it wasn't. It was less gimmicky even than Avatar. It was really, there's very slight, modest 3D. Mm-hmm. And I think well used. But my problem remains, which is, you know, it's fine. I don't feel like it made it so much better. And it's, at least in the real 3D that I saw it, and it's half as bright. So I'm still sitting kind of in the dark.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. Unless you go to an IMAX.
I got
to
see it in IMAX 3D.
Or some AMC theaters have a enhanced theater experience, or ETX, which also uses two projectors.
Everybody who saw it in IMAX said it was incredible.
Yeah.
So, and that's usually the case.
That's right. And that's what I always try to go see 3D in an IMAX theater because of that reason.
Right.
But I didn't go see Prometheus, and I'll tell you why. It has nothing to do with the technology. I've heard it's a gorgeous-looking movie.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful film.
Yeah. But I simply do not like yuckiness.
There's a lot of yuckiness. Do not go if you have a weak stomach.
It's goopy, and it's yucky. And
you were right. You were right.
I have never seen any of the Alien films for that reason.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think your instinct is good, Scott.
Yeah.
It's pretty goopy. However, it is beautiful. In fact, at the very earliest parts of it are some of the most beautiful helicopter footage I've ever seen.
Well, I'm certainly going to get the Blu-ray, the 3D Blu-ray that comes out, so that I can, you know, watch clips.
Right.
And use them in TV reviews.
Yeah. I think the first half of the movie is not goopy, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous.
Tom Merritt on Framerate mentioned that he said the first half of the movie is a science fiction movie, and the second half is a horror movie.
Exactly what I said. I agree with him. And no spoilers. We're not going to spoil it for anybody.
No.
But it is probably appropriate to let people know that, you know, it's not for the little ones, and it's certainly not for anybody with a squeamish stomach.
Yeah. And including me.
However, I just wanted to say, the 3D at least was used judiciously and well. I don't feel like I needed it, but it wasn't gimmicky, and I do appreciate that.
I bet you that most of the depth, most of the Z axis, if you will, was behind the screen plane rather than in front.
Yes. Oh, you're exactly right. And that's the one thing I hate is like snowflakes falling in my lap or sticks whapping me in the face. They did both in Avatar. They didn't do that at all in this. They're even in some of the space scenes, nothing comes at you.
Right.
You're
and
right.
That is the secret to good 3D.
You're right, because that's gimmicky. When stuff comes at you, that's so you'll go, oh!
Yeah.
and plus,
it tends to break up, you know, in your eyes.
Yes, weird.
And so behind the screen, or most everything behind the screen plane, is one of the techniques that people who make good 3D use all the time.
And Lisa, who went with me and usually gets headaches in 3D, some people get headaches, said she did not get a headache. There was, and I think that's exactly why. Everything was behind the plane.
Yep.
Good Lord. What is happening is my internal clock is all messed up. We have to take a break. Scott, hang in there.
I will.
Please. And all you callers, we'll get to you soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everything's going fast. What's going on here?
Have you had your coffee today?
Too much, probably.
I'll mention in the next segment
that I'm
actually going to the world premiere of the newest Disney Pixar movie called Brave.
Oh, I can't wait to see Brave. That looks really good.
That looks really good. Yeah. And I'm going to the red carpet premiere at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood where they do the Oscars.
That'll be awesome.
On Monday, which is before it's released.
I'm jealous.
And even better, this is the first movie done with a soundtrack in a format called Dolby Atmos, in which they have speakers not only all around you, but overhead. And so it's a much more immersive experience. It's what's called an object-oriented sound format, so the mixers take individual sound emitting objects like people and cars and arrows and whatever, and put them in the 3D sound space.
Yeah.
And then it gets rendered by the system to be where it is. And I've already heard one demo of it, and I'm going to go hear this. This is the first movie mixed in it. It's going to be very cool.
Hey, Greg, what? The usual. I like your narwhal. Do you know that's what that is?
The narwhal salad?
Very impressive. That's great. You're a good artist. Really, seriously. Wow. Awesome. purpose-built solution. To give you more control, the Kalamatas are on the other side. They're brown-black, and they're on the other side. You'll see, and they're pitted, and they're whole. They're not sliced. Kalamata.
Kalamata olives?
You will love them. They're Greek. They're fabulous. Yeah.
Ugh, I hate olives. All olives.
Well, I hate 3D, so there.
There, see?
So, yeah, so I bought the Emotivas. I mean, the whole issue is how am I going to get a wire back? So I've actually rearranged my entire system and rugs so that I can get wires to the back.
Well, you could put them along the ceiling, you know, the
That's boundary. The other thing. I was thinking hanging them, but I'd still be able to see them. But we'll see. I mean, I think I'm going to be able to do it. And I finally gave in. The Emotivas sounds so good. And I didn't even get the – I got the 5.2s, not even the 6.2s. And based on the recommendation from your site, actually.
Well, good.
So there's summer sale. And anybody wants these – and I do not get paid to advertise these. But they are really – knocking the cost down. In fact, it makes me kind of mad.
It's a serious value. It's a seriously good value.
You know, I paid $800 for my pair of front speakers, $500 now.
Yeah.
My center channel was $400, $250.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm kind of bummed. Oh, actually, mine was $300. It's $179. But I did, you know, I didn't get the surrounds, which are normally $350. They're at $225 now. So I did order the surrounds. So now I'll have a complete, except the sub is something else, but that's all right. I'm not
right, but that's all right.
Yeah.
So you haven't gotten them yet? You haven't installed them yet?
No, I just ordered them today.
Oh, okay.
Because I just saw this sale and I went, whoa! I'm not going to, I was really tempted. I just can't afford to get the amps and stuff. Not as big a price drop on their priest. I might wait till the XMC comes out. Someday I'll buy this. Well, actually, okay, so their UMC 1 AV processor, $699 down to $499, so $200 off. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
They're really being aggressive on this. Someday I'll upgrade to this. But I, you know, one of the nice things about my Onkyo is I have a remote control on my iPhone and my Android phone.
Exactly.
So that's pretty sweet.
I don't think Emotiva offers that.
I doubt that.
Yeah. No, that's very cool.
We are ordering a Sonos sub for review. Yes, Dr. Mom. But I have my own sub. I actually love the Orb sub that I have. It's a very good sub. It's kind of overpowering. All right, here we go.
Many times. All right, Leo, carbonite your library.
Thank you.
It's inevitable.
It was a, you know, I want to see it again. It's interesting. It's a very interesting movie. It, not a great movie, but a very interesting movie. Scott Wilkinson is here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott is our home theater guru. He's the home theater guy at hometheater.com. And I didn't even give you time to answer a question, so go ahead and do a question from your audience.
Okie doke. The question from the audience is, somebody wrote in and has an older AV receiver that has HDMI inputs but does not decode the new audio formats on Blu-ray of DTS HD and Dolby True HD.
Let alone Dolby Atomo Bobomo.
Well,
Bonobo,
there's Dolby Atmos, and that's
Atmos.
A whole different subject.
Okay.
That's
is that going to come to home theater at some point, you think?
Someday. Sure.
Yeah.
Years down the
Everything
line.
Does.
For now, it's only for commercial cinema. Okay. And just so people know what that is, it's a sound system with speakers not only all around the audience, but above the audience as well, overhead. And at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood, where they do the Oscars, it used to be the Kodak Theater, and then Kodak went bankrupt, and Dolby has just signed a 20-year lease.
Oh, good on Dolby. That's great. It should be the Dolby.
Now,
so it's the old
it's
Kodak
Theater. The Dolby Theater.
Yeah, because they had the Oscars there, and they call it the Chapter 11 Theater or something. Yeah.
Yes, right. Billy Crystal called it the Chapter 11 Theater this year. I thought that was great.
So now it's going to be the Dolby Theater, as it
the
should
Dolby
be.
Theater.
I think that's good, yeah.
That's right. And they put in this Atmos system in which the sound mixer for the movie can take individual objects like cars or whatever and place them in a 3D sound space. And so it'll appear to be above you. Planes will actually fly overhead. I'm going to see the world premiere of Brave, which is the world's first movie mixed in Atmos.
Wow.
On Monday, and I'll give you a report next week. But anyway,
I thought I was cool because I have a 5.1 system.
Now the Dolby Theater has 164 speakers.
Okay, well, that's past my budget. So good, I don't feel so bad.
Including 6 subwoofers.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
You got to rattle the seats.
Anyway, back into the home theater world and down to earth, shall we say. This guy has an AVR that does not decode Dolby True HD or DTS HD. How does he get those sounds? How does he get those files, those sound formats? How can he hear them without having the AV receiver decode them? The answer is simple. Have the player decode them. Fortunately, he has a Sony AV receiver that doesn't do this, but he has a Sony Blu-ray player that does.
And I bet most Blu-ray players do.
Yes. These days, most modern Blu-ray players do. That's exactly correct. So there's two ways to do it. One is to simply tell the player, decode all of the sound formats you find on Blu-ray to PCM, pulse code modulation, which is the standard type of digital audio that's on a CD, that it's uncompressed audio. So the player decodes it, sends it via HDMI to the receiver. All HDMI receivers that have HDMI inputs can deal with PCM. So that's the first way. The second way, if the player has what's called multi-channel analog outputs, which are either 6, 5.1, or 8, 7.1, actual physical outputs, RCA jacks, you can connect those with separate cables to the corresponding input on the receiver, if the receiver has it. I prefer the HDMI approach because it's only one cable. It's a lot more convenient and clean. And it works just fine. So the answer is no need to worry if your receiver doesn't have these decoders. All you need is a Blu-ray player with the decoders, which virtually, as you say, virtually all of them have. And just go into the menus, the audio menu, say, send PCM. Boom, you're done.
Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks was great this week, by the way. Michael Fremmer was fascinating, talking about analog audio.
Vinyl.
Yeah, vinyl.
He was amazing, actually. Yeah. He's a very strong advocate. I was so happy to see you in the chat room, actually.
It was a great show. I really enjoyed
hyping
watching
it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Scott does that show 1:30. Actually, it's going to be soon. It's going to be 1 Pacific, so it's easier to remember.
Yes, exactly. I need to find out what date you want me to change that, but I'm happy to anytime.
July 2nd.
July 2nd it shall be.
Until then, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time on twit.tv. Yep. Who's your guest on Monday?
Monday, it's Tyle Hertzens, the editor of innerfidelity.com, and he's going to be talking about measurements and blind audio testing. He has a very different approach to that than Michael Fremmer or Steve Guttenberg, who basically say, blind testing, feh. And Tyle Hertzens says, no, blind testing is important.
I think so.
So there's a big debate in the audio community about this.
Really?
So we're going to get his side of the story on Monday.
And now you know why it's called Home Theater Geeks. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson.
Right.
HomeTheater.com. Catch Scott every week on this show and then every Monday on Home Theater Geeks. We'll talk to you next week.
Next week. Thanks
Take
so
care,
much.
Scott. Tom in Agora Hills, you are a patient man. Thanks for waiting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
I can. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, no problem. Well, I ordered my new dream computer. I've been waiting for it since December, or actually January.
Wow.
It's the Vizio all-in-one.
Oh, yeah. They announced that in January at the Consumer Electronics Show. I'm glad to hear it's available now.
Yeah, it is. So my concern is my old desktop, I think there's a Trojan in it.
Uh-oh.
Although I run Microsoft Security Essentials, and it doesn't seem to detect anything.
Well, why do you think there's a bad guy in your system?
Well, I have a usage report on my internet data.
Yeah.
It's that Networks, WRX.
Yeah.
And if I look at the hourly report, there is almost as much communication going on between 7 o'clock at night and 6 in the morning when I'm not on the computer at all.
Well, but remember, you've got email going on. There may be backing up going on. It doesn't, you know, computers are often accessing the outside world. I wouldn't necessarily assume that's a problem. But let's, since you are getting a new computer, this is a great opportunity to start fresh.
Well, that's what I was going to do. My concern was if I have some type of virus in there that I'm unable to find, I'm concerned I back up to Carbonite, and I also back up to an on a hard drive next to my computer. I'm concerned if I put that data back on the new computer, I may inadvertently put bad data on the new computer.
It's a legitimate concern. First of all, don't put the old computer on the network at the same time as the new computer's on the network, because some worms propagate around the network. It would be a prudent thing to do is to turn on the Windows firewall. Actually, it's on already before you put that new Visio on the network. And best thing to do, I would say, is back up all your data. You're doing it anyway. Take the old potentially corrupted computer off the network, offline. You know, shut it down, and now put your new Visio on. You got Windows 7 running on it, so you're good there. You can install your apps from the desktop. And then, very important, I would say, is run a scan on the external drive. But chances are you've not backed up the virus, because most viruses, all viruses, need to be on a program. Now, this is the catch. If you had a corrupted Adobe Reader, for instance, which was a problem, or a corrupted DLL that the read JPEGs, it would be possible to craft a PDF file or a JPEG image file, even though these are pure data files, that could infect your computer, because what they would do is they would impact the computer through the program Adobe Reader or that Microsoft DLL and so forth. Now, those have all been patched. And as long as you're up to date, which you will be with this new computer, I think it's probably fine and safe to restore your data, but your data only from the old system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater, MP3 players, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. So much news to talk about this week. I have to get to the phones, but we are waiting to find out what Microsoft's big announcement is tomorrow. Late last week, this week passed, I think on Wednesday, Microsoft sent out invitations to the press, not to me, because I guess I'm not the press, saying, hey, you're not going to want to miss this one. We've got a big announcement in Los Angeles on Monday. And then the speculation machine ramped up. What could it possibly be? It has centered around, and it seems to have congealed around, a tablet, a Microsoft tablet, perhaps based on Xbox, an entertainment-centric tablet, maybe something like the Kindle Fire. Maybe not even running Windows 8. My friend Mary Jo Foley, who hosts a show called Windows Weekly on our podcast network, has some interesting speculation. She says, what if the rumored Microsoft tablet isn't a Windows tablet? Maybe it's more of an entertainment device, a manufactured tablet by Microsoft. Microsoft doesn't make PCs, remember, but they do make the Xbox. And they probably are looking at Apple saying, boy, I'd love to get a little of that something-something there. What if they did an Xbox tablet? An entertainment consumption device. That's the latest speculation. Of course, then there'd be a question, well, why didn't they announce it 2 weeks ago at the big entertainment expo, E3, in L.A.? And, of course, they've got Windows RT coming out, their new tablet interface, and that's coming out in this fall. It is very mysterious. It is very mysterious. But we'll find out, won't we, day after tomorrow. Larry, San Francisco, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for being so patient, Larry.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I am calling because I'm doing the old-time geek thing that Apple sort of eschewed earlier, in that I'm building a desktop PC for a friend who's disabled and wants something to go online with. And anyway, the point is...
That's very kind of you. That's great. And I do often, you know, it's true. We used to talk about building your own computer all the time. But nobody does that anymore because it's just such a commodity these days.
Well, yeah, this is a replacement for one he had. He was in sort of a bad relationship, and the other person destroyed his computer.
Oh,
and
no.
It's sort of his only access. And nice. I'm, like I said, I'm an old-time geek, and we're really good friends, so I'm building one
I
for
think
him.
That's great.
And I'm Frankensteining it, basically, getting all the stuff that I have just around my apartment.
So that's to say, you're basically going to make this a very inexpensive computer.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Because he's doing it for like, he's paying me like $200 plus shipping to get it to him.
That is very kind of you to do that.
But the problem is, I'm putting it together and I've had to use IDE drives as opposed to SATA drives.
Now we're really in the past. Good old days.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I started setting it up and I discovered for some odd reason, for one thing, the motherboard I had, which is an old motherboard of mine, it was a good one, it was an ASUS, but it only had one working IDE port. I mean, it has two ports on it, but one of them won't detect. If you hook anything up to it, it just isn't detected by BIOS or by Windows. So after
now, you remember, Larry, and this is taking me back to the dim, dark days, that cabling is very important and jumpering is very important on IDE.
Yeah, exactly.
That a single IDE port can support two drives if you have the proper cable and the drives are properly jumpered, one for master, one for slave.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's the problem in that this, for some reason, it seems to insist that the DVD burner be the master and the hard drive be the second. When I jumpered it the other way around, it would only see the DVD. It wouldn't see neither Windows nor BIOS would see the drive at
That's
all.
That's interesting. It sounds like that might be a failing of the DVD player. It may want to be the only thing on the IDE chain.
That's what I suspect.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
as I said, this is a fairly modern motherboard, and it has like 4 or 5 SATA connectors, so I'm sure it was expected that you would connect SATA, your hard drive through SATA.
It could be that. You might look in BIOS to make sure that there isn't a setting you've missed in there. And it could be the DVD player itself says, no, I have to be the only thing on here.
Yes.
I am the master. I shall never be a slave.
But I surrendered, basically, and went ahead and jumpered it the way it wants to. And it seemed to have been working fine, except when I got everything all set up and went in to look into my, I installed certain software that he needs and it wouldn't run. I looked into my computer and discovered that the hard drive is letter D.
Right, because the way Windows works is it goes down the chain and starts with C.
Right, but
so the DVD
no
is C.
No, it isn't.
Well,
it's
would be E. if you put it.
Exactly.
It might be if you put a disk in the drive. That's a really that doesn't surprise me because it's looking at the hard drive and saying, "Well, you're a slave on the IDE, so you are a D drive." I don't care.
So,
I don't care what the DVD says. You are a D drive.
So I decided to surrender and try and just change the drive letter. And I've discovered that you can't do that in Windows. You have to do that by going into the regedit. So
you're going to be so sorry. Please don't. I would stop right there. Never try to trick Windows.
Well, I found this on the internet, so I thought it was okay, and I went and tried it. And
yeah, no, everything on the internet. What do you think, Ben?
Exactly.
Ben Fransky's in here. He is a specialist in all of this stuff. He's writing a note. You could say it out loud, Ben. I can hear you. He says, use the, that's a good idea. That instead of doing the registry, use the what version of Windows are you using? Vista 7? XP?
XP.
So you right-click on my computer, you select Manage, you go into the system.
I tried that.
And it wouldn't let you reassign those drives?
Right, because it says it's the boot drive, and so you can't reassign the number of the letter.
Yeah, I would, that's right. Do you have other partitions on that D drive, or that
no.
second drive? Nothing there. No hidden partitions. It is the master
partition.
It's a bootable partition.
It's the only partition. and it wouldn't let me change the number.
No, Larry, I could spend more time on this, but I'm sorry to say that this is putting everybody else to sleep, and I'm not really sure. Can you get in our chat room?
I can try on my main computer, yeah.
Yeah, irc.twit.tv. Just a web browser is all you need. There, the chat room is rife with ideas. Many of them will probably be dangerous, some of them wrong, but maybe the right one is floating in there among all that flotsam. He's saying try cable select, one of them is. There are IDE to SATA adapters. But anyway, it's a little hardcore for the tech guy audience. I don't want to put them all to sleep so early in the day. So I'll send you the chat room, Larry. They're really great. If you want to join our chat room, by the way, if you have an idea for Larry, go to techguylabs.com. That's our website. There's a chat link there. Or as I said, you can go directly via your browser. Or if you're a professional chatter, that you have your very own IRC client, irc.twit.tv. And the chat room is #TwitLive. Jeff in Los Angeles has some thoughts about the new MacBooks, the built for obsolescence MacBooks. We'll talk to him next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Tomorrow, so you gotta hang on till tomorrow. Come what may. Tomorrow, tomorrow, I love ya. Tomorrow,
it's only a day away. Thank you, Kyle Benham, musical director, for that exciting bumper music. We don't usually do a cappella bumper music, but sometimes it's such a dramatic performance that it just galvanizes the audience, gets them ready for the next segment of the show. That wasn't it. Jeff in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. Hey, before you go out and buy your new
Dolby. Too late! I spent the money already! I can't believe it! What do you think?
Before you go out and spend your money on that Dolby, you should look at, Red Tails was cut in the Aurora 3D, which is the competitor to the new Adobe.
Oh,
Adobe
interesting.
System,
which, and who does Aurora? DTS or?
Well, that's the THX. Which THX. Is the new 11.1, okay. which is similar to the Dolby system. They're both really high end systems, and it's the big battle of the new big theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
Between those two, there's actually a big. They're going out in the big theater things, redoing theaters to do 3D sound. Because 3D pictures are there, but now sound has to be there. So.
Well, and of course, movie theaters are looking to get people to come out. Everybody now has a pretty good home theater system. A lot of people do anyway. So what do we do to make it a better experience? And that's one way to do it. So, yeah. Because I can't afford three subwoofers. Somebody in the chat room said three subs, that's more than the Canadian Navy has.
Well, it's not just three subs, but it's also a special sound control system underneath the theater and above the theater. And it's actually...
Wait a minute. There's underneath? They're putting something underneath the theater?
Yeah, because it's actually surrounding. So you have the speakers going along the old way. You have the speakers going along the edges and on top. Now you have double the things going around the top, double the things going around the bottom. You have some in the front, some in the back, and then you have a master control above you and below you. So it's totally immersing you in sound is the new.
Now, if they could just make some decent movies, we'd be set.
There you go. So we had actually met at the NAB show when you did an interview with me and you asked me to give you a call when the new Mac, because we had talked about the new Mac Pros and MacBook Pros and stuff like that coming out.
Yeah. So what do you think?
I'm part of the ACN group, which is Apple Consultants Network, and so we've all been talking about this. And the thing about that is there's a couple of things that you didn't mention that is the new processor, the new hyper-threading processor, and what that actually means to the people who buy these things. And the difference is that the new hyper-threading processor, kind of divides up processors into mini processors. so that it can handle more smaller packets. So if you're sending massive amounts of email, you know, and
you
they
know,
take
I, wait a minute. Hold on, Jeff. We've had hyper-threading in Intel processors since the Core 2 Duo. This is not anything new. So, and I'm not sure it's a big deal, frankly. So the new processors in pretty much every PC, in fact, even in my phone now, I have a Galaxy S3 quad core. That means they have four processors in them. And some of the newer Intel chips, well, you know that Intel has the i3, the i5, and the i7. The i5, which is kind of a sweet spot for most people, quad core. But then the i7, one of the differences, their number, they have more cache, for instance, but one of the differences is they turn on hyper-threading, which means that each individual chip, each core, can do two things at once. So you have now processors in these new MacBooks, in fact, in the MacBook Airs as well, that can do eight things at the same time. There is a, I think, a fairly strong case to be made that this is completely useless. You have to, in order to take advantage of this, first of all, you have to have an operating system and applications that know about it. Now, if you have an operating system that knows about it, yeah, and then if you're running eight different programs at the same time and they're all doing something, that's great. Then they can all have their own threads. For years, processors have solved this problem by bit slicing or time slicing. They would do a little of this, then a little of the next thing, a little of the next thing. And processors are so fast that even a single core processor can do many, many things at the same time, right? They just do a, they just go one down the line and go, I'll do a little of you, a little bit of that, a little bit of that, a little bit of that, then we'll start over a little bit of that. And I don't think most people are going to see a big difference. The real reason that we're seeing quad core processors and hyper threading, in my opinion, is that Intel blew it. Intel was going to make their chips faster and faster. Remember, they had a chip that was going to be more than 4 gigahertz. We never did see that chip. You know why? Because you could fry eggs on it. These things were so fast and so hot, and they caused all sorts of noise problems in the enclosure. They turned out not to be very efficient, not very effective. And Intel said, oh, we got a problem. How are we going to sell new chips if they're stuck at 2 and 3 gigahertz? People buy chips by the processor speed. So fortunately, they had a little skunk works in Israel. And these guys said, oh, we got an idea. We could put multiple chips on the same die, on that same little plastic die. We could put two chips on there. Then you could say, well, yes, it's still only 3 gigahertz, but it's two of them. So that's the same as 6, right? And then, oh, now there's 4 of them. So that's the same as 12, right? And now we can hyperthread. So that's the same as 24, right? But what they neglected to point out is unless your operating system and software take advantage of it, and you, as a user, are doing things that require threading, it is not really much of an advantage. We've started to see games now start to get threaded. For a long time, though, a faster processor when you gamed was better than a multi-core or threaded processor because people don't work that way. Now, Jeff works in high-end software, and if you are, for instance, doing video editing or you're a Photoshop user, then multi-threads probably make a big difference. But he said it. Most people, what are you doing on your you're getting your email, you're browsing around, and maybe if you're really hardcore, you're recompressing DVD video. Well, there's three things. I don't see a huge value to these big multi-core processors. And I really think it's more marketing than anything else. And I can tell you, you can prove it to yourself by using a computer that has 2 cores and comparing it to a computer that has 4 cores. Does your computer, let's put it this way, do you have one of these new MacBooks? Or even, I have one of the MacBook Airs, the i7 MacBook Airs that has 4 cores, 8 threads. Doesn't feel 8 times faster by any means. In fact, it feels pretty much the same. I got to tell you. It pretty much the same. Now, synthetic benchmarks might show it to be faster, but really, in real-time use, if you're doing email, you're surfing the net, you're watching TV. Give me a break. Alana, Manhattan Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi, Leo. Alana. Welcome. Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
So my problem is that my MacBook Pro won't turn on. It stays on the gray screen with the Apple and the loading.
Oh, wheel. I'll help you. Hold on. Okay, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I'll tell you what you can do to get that MacBook Pro booting. 8888 Ask Leo's a number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See, I have... The reason I kept playing with it, I really... It's not for the TV show, the radio show, because it's a video thing. But I have a multi-core pen here. This is a multi... This processor... This look, it's got red. It's got black. It's got a stylus. It's got blue. So that is a four-core pen. But you know what? It still writes, you know, pretty much the same as a one-core pen. It's not hyper-threading. I mean, this is the silliest example of this. It's a quad-core phone. Four 1.4 gigahertz processors. That's just nuts. It does feel fast, though. Feels very, very snappy. Actually, the it's interesting because Microsoft on its Windows phone specs single-core processors. And people, and you know, if it's a selling point, of course, but that you can get multi-core processors. But I think if you use a Lumia 900, you're not going to say, "Oh, this feels sluggish to me." It doesn't. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about My Ford Mobile. My Ford Mobile. This is an app that goes with the new Ford Focus Electric and will go with all of the electric and plug-in vehicles from Ford as they come out, including that 2013 Ford Fusion Energy. 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available now. I go to the website. If you go to Ford.com/technology, well, actually, you can go directly. I typed it wrong. Ford.com/electric/Focus Electric/2012/. Then you can find out more about everything that's cool with this Ford Focus Electric, including, let me scroll down here, the My Ford Mobile app. Available for BlackBerry, I think, Windows, and Android. And it does so many sweet things. For instance, it's got the remote or value charging feature powered by Microsoft. So your local utility rates are built in. This is really, really cool. They're built in, and you press a button on the phone and it says, "Hey, just charge it at the lowest rates, will ya? Will ya?" You can also precondition your vehicle's temperature before you leave to save battery while you're plugged in. You can see the state of charging. See? Look at that. You can see as you drive it on the screen or on the phone. You can also find charging stations and the most eco-friendly route. They even kind of gamify it a little bit on the website. They've got a My Ford Mobile website where you can see how, you know, they have leaderboards, see how much CO2 you've saved and so forth. Really fun. Really cool. This is the My Ford Mobile app. It's got social features too. If you've got a Ford Focus Electric, you have my deepest jealousy. I wish I had that car. Take a look. By the way, if you go to an EV-certified Ford dealer right now, bring your smartphone, and they'll install the app, and they can show you how it works. And it's fun to take a drive in these. These cars are so much fun to drive. Ford.com/technology to learn more about the My Ford Mobile app. Very cool stuff. I love it that they've got smartphone apps now for your Ford. I think it's just so cool. Some good stuff on this website. Oh, this is cool. They have a this circle that lights up when your car is charged. That's so cool. It just plugs in. I love that. Can't wait. Do
boo, 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 doo, doo, doo.
Yeah, one-speed transmission. Yeah, because it's electric. Oh, let's see what kind of... I can get ingot silver. That's pretty. Tuxedo black. Ooh, that's kind of sweet. Platinum. Blue candy. Frosted glass. I like the black. I might get a black one. And it's got the 17-inch wheels, aluminum wheels. Okay. I'll take it. And then, let's see. Sony audio system with HD radio. Yep. Definitely sync is included with my Ford Touch. I'm going to get the leather-trimmed seats, of course, because I'm a leather guy. There you go. That's not bad. That's less than the Mustang.
Talk about a fast computer.
That's what quad-core does for you. Alvin and the Chipmunks. That's such a good song, even the Chipmunks can't ruin it. Kyle Benham, our musical director, says this is what that song sounds like on a quad-core processor. Yeah, baby! Now, I was thinking, we were talking about multi-core processors and what a silly idea that is. And I was thinking, well, I do have quad-core in this phone. This is the Galaxy S3, which I love. And it does feel very snappy, although, as somebody in the chat room pointed out, it's probably due more to optimization in the software, perhaps the graphics processor, etc. But one thing I do notice, and perhaps this is the kind of thing that multi-cores could perhaps speed up, when I take panoramas with the camera, it stitches it in almost instantly. Almost instantly. And there are a few other applications that I have used in the past. TunePaint is one, which will take a picture and then redraw it as a charcoal drawing. It's a really fun little app on Android and iOS. And TunePaint is almost instantaneous, too. It's noticeably faster than it is on a dual-core iPhone, for instance. But I also have to point out that Windows phones are single-core. Microsoft spec'd out single-core processors. All the Windows phones, including the very nice high-end Lumia 900, are single-core, and they don't feel slow. I tell you, they don't feel slow. So let's go back to Alana in Manhattan Beach, who's... MacBook Pro won't turn on. It goes to that gray screen with a little sad Mac, or is it a blinking question mark, Alana?
It's just it has an apple and the loading, the circle loading.
Oh, and it never goes past that.
It never goes past that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a hard drive problem. Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's a hard drive problem.
Yeah.
I took it to the Mac store, to the Genius Bar, and they said that I would need to get a new hard drive, but... I wasn't sure if they also said that I need to maybe boot from my own CD, but I don't have that CD anymore. So I don't know if I can try to use another CD.
You can. It's not specific to your machine. In fact, I always keep around a USB key with OS X that I can boot to. Very important. I bet you don't have a backup, do you, Alana?
I do.
Oh, yay!
But I haven't backed up in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, no. Well, maybe you've lost 2 weeks worth of data. So this is why backup is really critical. And when you bring it to the Apple store, if you beg and plead, and I had this happen, they will give you the old hard drive. But you have to say, I want the old hard drive. Because otherwise they take it out and I don't know what they do with it. They throw it away or whatever.
With the Mac hard drive, can you get the stuff?
Sure.
Can you get your files off of it?
You sure can.
Okay.
It'll help to have a friend with a PC or a desktop Mac, but in most cases, just because you can't boot from a drive does not mean that that drive is not readable. It may be that the OS X parts are not readable, but very often you can look at that drive, get the data off of it, and sometimes you can run a program like SpinWrite on the drive, and that will recover it. All hard drives have this happen. All hard drives eventually get bad sectors, and if the bad sector, the unreadable portion of the drive, is on a place where it needs to boot, well, then you won't be able to boot, and that's exactly what you're getting right now.
And there's no way of just fixing this drive?
Yes, very likely you can fix it.
Okay.
But you need a helping hand, somebody with a desktop computer. who can, you know, the Mac people won't do it, but if you bring it to a regular computer shop, a PC computer shop, they can run SpinRite on it, and that often will fix the whole thing.
Okay, cool.
All right. Nothing.
Thank
to,
you.
Nothing to worry about. You. Their diagnosis is accurate, but Apple's geniuses are not like the PC geeks that you and I know and love. They will take it out, and I don't know if they recycle it, throw it out, what, but they will not save that data for you, unless they're really nice. But if you can get the drive from them, and I've had that happen. In fact, almost the same thing happened to my son. It was on a Mac Pro, not a MacBook Pro. It was on a desktop. It was an iMac. So I brought it into the Apple store. They said, drive's dead. We're going to replace it. And I said, could I please, sir, may I have the old drive, please? Drive? You want the old drive? Yes, sir, please. Just for old time's sake. Well, all right. And they gave it to me, and I brought it home. And all the data was still on it. All the data was still there, and I was able, and my son was shocked. I said, well, you know, your father is the tech guy. George in Houston, Texas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, George.
Funny, at the top of the hour, I have a similar problem to the guy I was calling at the top of the hour, all the IDE stuff. I have a computer that's running Windows XP, and I'm trying to install a SATA CD burner on it, but it doesn't recognize it. The computer doesn't recognize it. I was able to, you don't see it in my computer or anything like that, and the device manager just doesn't recognize it, but I was able to get something called a PCI to SATA adapter, and that worked perfectly. And I'm thinking maybe I should just leave well enough alone, but I'm still trying to figure out why my native SATA ports on my motherboard do not work. And so I'm hearing things like updating the BIOS and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. The first thing you should do is check your BIOS, see if those drives are even seen. You know, when you first boot the computer into the BIOS setup, it'll show you drives, and it'll tell you if there's even a connector there, you know, if anything can be seen. But if you see not only that there is a SATA connector, but you can say, oh, it's a Western Digital's 337291 on there, then you'll know that, well, at least the controller's working and the BIOS is working and the SATA chain is working. So maybe there's something wrong with that drive.
Well, actually, as I said, the drive works with a PCI to SATA adapter. I can get it to work that way. But it won't work with the ones that are on the motherboard.
So you put a PCI card in there with the SATA connector and it won't work. All right, yeah, then it sounds like it is the SATA connector that's messed up.
Oh, boy, okay.
Yeah, and that's on the motherboard. That's a chipset.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Sounds like that's, you know, that's that was a good diagnosis because you tried the drive and it works fine. You might, you can always go to the website for the motherboard and get the latest firmware and update it.
Okay.
You know, check that. Make sure that Lawn Dog's pointing out, and that's a good point, when you go into BIOS, make sure the SATA interface is turned on.
Okay. I did go into the BIOS a little bit. I'm a little nervous about fooling around.
No, you can't hurt anything in there. It's fine. You know, just if you mess it up, then you just reset to defaults.
Okay.
So you can't really hurt anything in the BIOS. It's not like working in the registry or something.
Oh, okay.
You can make it unbootable, but the thing is BIOS will always show up. So if you make it unbootable, you go, oh darn. Or something stronger. And then you go back, you boot into BIOS, and you press reset to defaults, and then you're back to normal.
Okay.
So I'd mess with that. I would look at the BIOS. I would look at what the BIOS sees, see if it could see a drive on there, maybe update the firmware, make sure it's turned on. That's always a good idea. And, you know, if none of that works, yeah, then it sounds like that SATA chain. Those are chips. You know, everything on that motherboard, you know, you plug in a ton of stuff into the motherboard, right? The USB is on there, the SATA connectors, all these connectors, those are all connected to controller chips on the motherboard. The problem is if those fail, and they don't fail very often because they're not moving parts, they're microprocessors. But if they fail, you're kind of out of luck because the only way to fix them is to get a whole new motherboard because they're soldered in. And that's kind of the problem we're talking about with this new MacBook Pro is it's there are no user serviceable parts. It's all glued together into one big lump. So if something goes wrong with the screen on the new MacBook Pro, you might as well just get a new MacBook Pro. That's why I bought the insurance. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. I'm Leo Laporte. the tech guy. My steampunk laptop is on its way, apparently. I'm so excited. I got an email from Datamancer. He said, we're close. I'm so happy. Let me read you the email. Well, I will in a second.
Carbonite Library, Leo.
Tetris! Don't you just feel like you should make blocks rotate right now? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. It's SATA problem day today on the Tech Guy Show. Enrique, Newport Beach, California. Hey, Enrique, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Great I'm wonderful. Show. Thanks for calling.
I had a question. I know you have been recommending Chrome over Firefox lately, but we have Firefox in all our computers.
Firefox is fine. I hope people don't think I don't like Firefox. For a while, Firefox had a big memory leak in it, and so it would occupy huge amounts of RAM. They fixed that in the most recent version of Firefox. The other reason I tend to recommend Chrome over Firefox is because people often install a ton of Firefox extensions, making it very sluggish. And I think Chrome is a little more secure, a little more robust, because they sandbox each tab in Chrome. So if a tab crashes, it doesn't bring down the whole browser. They come with Flash, and Flash is sandboxed, so it's more secure. I think Chrome is a nice browser, but nothing wrong with Firefox.
Well, my question specifically is, you know, we've been happy with 3.6 for a while, and they kept updating it. Now, as you know, in March, they have stopped updating 3.6. They want everybody to go to 12, and we put it in a couple of the Windows 7 computers, and what people are saying on the bulletin board seems to be true, that it is slower. So, you know, I've been resisting going to 12, but then, of course, the old 3.6 is starting to fail with the new Windows.
It's not secure. You got to go, unfortunately, with browsers especially, you have to upgrade. It's not an option. And 3.6 is not secure.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
I don't know if the new Firefox is slow. I think the current version is 13.0.1, and I think it's pretty good, but is there a reason you don't want to use Chrome?
The only reason was that, you know, we put in a lot of add-ons recommended by you.
Yeah, there you go. You know why it's slow.
On the 3.6, it's not slow. You know, we put in stop the script, no script.
No script is great, yep.
And we put in the one that kills the ads, you know, so everything is already nicely. That's why we've been hesitating to go to Chrome. Are there add-ons of the similar nature in
there
Chrome?
There are. Script No is a no script for Chrome. It's no script backwards, Script No. And there are a number of ad block. I hope I didn't recommend an ad block. I think others have recommended ad block. I believe that people should look and click on ads, because most sites are offering free services based on the ad revenue. Just like this radio show, you know. It would be hypocritical of me to say don't watch ads on the web where I'm making you listen to ads on the radio, right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, I have to say,
your recommendation is either go to Chrome with the different add-ons or go to the latest Firefox.
Well, I would start with the latest Firefox. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I would start with the latest. I think you'll find it a lot faster. They fixed the memory leak. You're right. 3.6 was, for many, the last good Firefox. They went through a very bad period there. But 13, I think, should solve most of those problems. And if you really... still experiencing slowness. I love Chrome. Chrome is very fast. And Script No does basically the same thing as No Script on Chrome. I'm not sure which ad block I would use, frankly, on Chrome, because I don't use ad blocks. But I'll ask the chat room which ad block they like for Chrome specifically. I, you know, the thing about, I use all of them, right? The thing about browsers, they're free. Each has pros and cons. On the Mac, at least on many of my Macs, Chrome is slow. So I use Safari, which is Apple's browser, even though there are things I hate about Safari. In fact, one of the things Apple announced that they're going to improve, finally, they're the last browser that still has a separate little window at the top of the screen for a search and the place you're going. Firefox and Chrome, for version after version, have been having a single box. I think Firefox was the first. They called it, what, the Anywhere box or something like that, or the Everywhere. So you just type what you want, whether it's a search or an address, in that one box, and it just goes. And I just think that that's so much smarter and easier, and it's just taken Apple forever to get there. So, yeah, it's the browsers are free. Get them all. You got Internet Explorer. That kind of comes with Microsoft Windows. I would update to the latest version of that, even on XP. What's the latest version you can use on XP? Is it 8 or 9? Maybe 9? 10, of course, will be the version that comes out with Windows 8. Firefox 13 just came out, and I think it's pretty good. I do say, though, that I use Chrome because I just like it. You know, me and Google, we go way back. Ander is in South Carolina. Our next caller. Hi, Ander. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Time Machine. That's right. He's suing Apple because Time Machine, Apple's backup program, lost his baby pictures. If you only have one copy of something, you do not have a backup. Even if it's on Time Machine, it's not a backup. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ander. I'm on a tear. I apologize.
So basically I'm trying to put together a podcast.
Great.
I was using, you know, a free trial for a sound recording system, but, you know, that's worn off now. My friends and I have really gotten into it, but I was wondering if there was maybe some kind of recording system that enabled you to just record any sounds that are coming or going from my computer, and that way I could actually play sounds
right
while we're recording.
What Windows, Mac, what platform are you using?
Windows PC.
Okay.
I'm on Vista right now.
Yeah. So you're saying what you want to record is Skype?
Yeah, I want to, exactly. But it's going to be for a podcast. I'd like to be able to interject some sounds into it, too. So that's where the sound mixer comes in.
Ah. Yeah, once you go to a mixer, then the software solutions aren't as critical. Because the mixer will take everything that's coming out of your computer. You could mix other things in. You probably would record off the mixer instead of recording off the computer. But you
I was actually thinking of a software mixer.
A software mixer. Well, I have recommended in the past for recording Skype something called Pamela. It's pamela.biz. Now, the free version only does 15 minutes, so you have to get the pro version if you want to do more, but I don't think it's very expensive. You have zero money to spend? I know when you're a podcaster, that's pretty much the case.
I mean, I do have a little bit, but free is always better.
Yeah. Let me see what the cost is. $32. For unlimited.
Okay.
So Pamela is a good one. Now, let me see. It does Skype audio. It does Skype video, which is kind of cool. Automatic call recording. I want to see if it'll record other sounds. I would do the trial first, right? And see if it's recording everything.
Okay.
That's Pamela, Pamela.biz. And let me ask in the chat room. And you might join us in the chat room, because there are other ways to route to, like, mix audio on a Windows PC. We're going to take a break, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Fraps, that's it. My mind is going. That's for video. People use this to record gaming. That's not probably as good, right?
Walk around.
Well, Audacity will not record Skype without special tools. So this is the problem. Is Skype, you can record one end but not both ends of the call.
I'll tell you, the first question is hard to answer. You know,
so Audacity, I don't think will record the full call. Jack Audio. Let's try that. Virtual audio cable. That's the one I was trying to remember. And that's free. Adware, phishing, so let's put these in the chat rather than the website. Worms, this malware, thing's this is the one I was trying to remember.
It's, not 32, is absolutely
it's a little complicated.
Do they have the best
but you use this with the Audition, it would be totally free.
Protection.
They also have the best heuristics.
That's this is the way you want to do it. Happens to you. So, you do this with Audacity. Editor's choice. Try the brand and do all the things you want to do.
ESET.com/Leo or call 866.
And this is free.
ESET. Like them on Facebook and.
So yeah, this is. I should have probably just said this. Gone straight to this.
Windows you need, not 32.
Thank you. That's the one I was wanted to think of. I was trying to remember. Oh, it's not free? I thought it was free.
It's free for up to three.
Three for three? Trial version limitations. Three cables. Well, that's probably sufficient. Skype, two, and then... but it adds a female voice reminder every second, few
You're
seconds.
Tuned to Premier
well, that
Channel
sucks.
7. Leo Laporte, the
$25 to $50.
6 minutes past the hour.
From Premier it's, Radio it's Russian. That's why. The Russians are very focused on making money. So what's a free one? XSplit. Well, I won't recommend VAC anymore. XSplit. Live stream your events.
Leo Laporte,
this is for video, yes? This is for video.
Radio Network.
Applian's free quarter. He's nicer website, yes. Speaks, oh, Speaks is terrible. If it only uses Speaks, don't. Jack Audio. All right, let's try that one.
This is Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will begin at 6 minutes past the hour from Premier Radio Network.
So Ben says he's used this on Linux, but he's not sure about the Windows version. Wow. Yeah, a lot of these, like, I've used Audio Hijack Pro. I mean, even that, as well-designed as it is very complicated.
This is Premier Channel 7. Leo
wow.
Laporte, the tech guy. We'll
this is interesting. Holy cow.
From Premier Radio Network.
Wow. This would be a... Yeah, this would be a good thing. Now, is this free? It's open source. Wow. That looks pretty good. See, I want this to be the show open. I like this.
It's Lisa's theme.
The heart is a blue.
I need an instrumental version of it, though, like a karaoke version.
No space to rent in this town. You're out of luck.
I love this song. I was listening to it this morning again.
The traffic is stuck.
I have a YouTube channel on my Pandora.
And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone.
It's a beautiful day for a tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On the Tech Guy Radio Network, now 184 stations strong and growing. It's a beautiful day. See, this to me, this says it all. I love this song. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., 8888-ASK-LEO. We welcome, 11 new stations this week, including KVOR in Colorado Springs, WEEU in Redding, Pennsylvania, WLAC in Nashville, WLDN in Traverse City, Michigan, WLFN in La Crosse, Wisconsin, WMNI in Columbus, Ohio, WOOD in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WOOD-FM in Muskegon, Michigan, WTAD in Quincy, Hannibal, WTDA in Columbus, Ohio, and WWIQ in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We love you all. Get ready to geek out. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. You might as well just put this on a post-it note and put it next to your computer because you may not need it today, but I suspect the day will come when you'll go, help me, tech guy, help me. 888-827 5536. Just remember 8888 Ask Leo. I was in Pilates class, you know, the exercise class the other day. And I don't know how, but for some reason, the guy next to me said, "Wait a minute, you're Leo Laporte." I said, "Yes." He said, "I've been meaning to ask you. I want to know what TV to buy." So I'm going, "Well, if you want plasma or LCD, I've been meaning to ask you." You know, I love being the tech guy. You ask me anything you want. 8888 Ask Leo. Andrew in South Carolina is doing a podcast, and he wanted to know some recommendations. And you know, Andrew, I don't know if you were listening during the break or in the chat room during the break, but I think we came up with a couple of very good solutions, which we will put in the show notes. But here's the one I would try. It's called Jack Audio. Okay. Jackaudio.org. It's open source. It's free. Yep. It's not, you know, as with often is the case with the open source software, maybe not the easiest to use. But you'll use that with Audacity, which is the free audio recorder. And it will allow you...
I've actually been using that to, like, post-recording splice in sounds and music and stuff.
So and by the way, you don't even have to splice them in. You can have multiple tracks in Audacity so you can mix them in. But, yeah, you want to do it live. That's, you know, boy, the secret sauce for my podcast network is we do everything live. We don't do any post because it takes too long, and that means it costs too much.
Right.
So Jack Audio, it does have a Linux version, but I understand there's a Windows version. Don't know how good that is. Ben Fransky, who runs our... fabulous.
Is that Jack's with an S or just Jack Audio?
J-A-C-K, just Jack singular audio.org. And they have Linux, they have OS X, Windows, Solaris. Ben Fransky, who has used the Linux version, he says it's very good. Ben runs our forums, by the way, which we never plug because we don't want anybody to know about our forums, right? Towncommons.twit.tv. Shh. Secret.
Anyway. I want to mention something, too.
Yeah, what's the name of your... First of all, I want to know what your show is.
Oh, it's a gaming podcast for Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh, what fun.
So we called it Max Torcast. Torcast is one word.
Max Torcast. I love it.
T-O-R
actually,
is I think it's Republic. Maximum Torcast.
Yeah, but cybernetic punks.com. Or
that's our website.
Yeah, maximumtorcast.blogspot.com where you can download it. That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, you can actually find it in iTunes as well.
Awesome.
So I figured out how to do that. I've only got three recorded so far, but, you know, for longevity's sake, I wanted to find some solutions that I could actually stick with.
Good. Yeah, I love this.
But I did remember a question that I'd heard you ask, or somebody had called in to ask you before, and I can totally confirm that when you're talking on Skype, if you set default on Windows anyway, for all of your sound to speakers, it will play everything out of your speakers, but you can put your Skype through your headset, and it will only be through your headset.
So this was the guy who wanted to watch TV while he was talking to his friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for the confirmation. So you can do that.
That was about it. I guess the only other question I had is that I found out that my father actually has a WordPress site, and I might be able to actually host my podcast through that. Is that a good source for hosting a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, of course, that no free site is going to give you unlimited bandwidth. So if you start doing a lot of shows, I would look at Libsyn, Libsyn.com. Libsyn is a very affordable podcast hosting. They charge you only for the storage, not for the bandwidth. And bandwidth is what will kill you. If suddenly everybody in the world signs up for Maximum Torcast, it could cost you so much you'd have to go out of business.
Right.
So Libsyn's a good one. And another one that is an advertiser, but I should recommend, is Squarespace.com. You could set up a Squarespace site for $16 a month, and that has unlimited bandwidth. So that would be a good podcast hosting solution. Unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth. You can have user areas. So you could say, I would do this. You got to try to make some money on this because it's going to cost you, right? I would say, hey, for $10 a year or $5 a month or whatever, you can make, we charge $2 a month, not charge, but we ask for $2 a month.
You could have access to a special area of the site that would give you additional features, that kind of thing. Good luck, Andrew. I love hearing people do this because the more content, the more people do stuff on the internet, the better it becomes, right? And most of the time, people do this out of for love, not for money. Paul in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Paul.
This is my time to say, help me.
Help me, Obi-Wan.
Yes. I got a receiver, a 7.1 channel receiver.
Yeah.
Because my player actually died on the other one. I got tired of punching it. And this one comes with a plug for the subwoofer, like an RCA plug.
Right.
But I have a couple subwoofers that are just bare wires.
Okay, so what the receiver is assuming is that you're going to use a powered subwoofer.
I don't have that.
And you don't have that. You have subwoofers that get that are just like regular speakers.
Yes.
And so they use speaker wire. Now, if your receiver does not have an amp for the sub, then...
I do have one, but I think it's for stereo. It allows me to plug in speakers from my receiver into that, and then the speakers for the front speakers out of the subwoofer to those. So they power the front speakers.
The subwoofer does.
Yes. But it doesn't have on-off, anything like that. And all
but the subwoofer plugs into the wall or no?
No.
Okay, so it's not a powered subwoofer. That sounds like that's just a pass-through, although it does sound like the subwoofer has a crossover in it. So here's the issue. Here's what happens with a subwoofer. You only want the subwoofer to reproduce the low frequencies. And so they use a passive circuit called a crossover that says, you play these frequencies, you play those frequencies. And usually the crossover point is somewhere between 80 hertz, 100 hertz, you know, very low frequency.
I just can't find a plug that has the RCA end to the...
No, you won't, because your amp doesn't expect unpowered subs. Hold on, I'll tell you how we can solve this in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He needs an amp. He's a separate little sub amp. The echo's back, by the way, Kyle. That had a lot of echo on that one.
Yeah, I've heard you mention it on a few calls. So every call has been having it for the most part today?
Well, this one was as bad as anything we'd ever had.
And still they expect you to roll out new systems.
All right, I'll send another email.
Thanks. Well, if that sounds familiar, and I'm sure it does, listen up because I have the solution that's going to make you a rock star at your company. It's time to harness the power of the cloud with Vertacore, a leading cloud hosting provider with over 10,000 virtual machines in service powered by the number one cloud technology.
Because that's who would care the most.
And best of all, with Vertacore, you only pay for what you use.
So, my chat room, just
you have a special project.
A little note about the website, TV website. As you know, on the website right now, as you scroll down, you'll see this window. What we've realized is that having this chat window here pushes everything way below the fold, and nobody's ever seeing any of this stuff. So what we've decided to do is make this chat window disappear, not merely collapse it, but... like that, and have it go up here in the menus. So I don't think that's going to affect anybody. We'll just have a link right here next to RSS that will say, you know, chat. And it'll be a pop-out chat. Because it's silly to spend all of this energy, all this, I don't know why I allowed this, have all of this space here for the chat room. So if that's okay with you, this will look a little different. It'll look basically like this. Because what was happening is all this stuff was below the fold. Nobody was seeing any of this stuff. Because nobody ever scrolls down. I think that we should have done that a long time ago. Almost everybody uses a pop-out chat. My original thinking was... that people would be watching the show and chatting in this window, but nobody does that anyway, right? So, yeah, I know some of you know that TwitPics are down here and all that, but It's not, you guys are, I'm not really worried about you guys. It's just somebody, a casual user who comes to the site and says, what, So it'll look more like this. I don't think anybody minds, but I'm just letting you know ahead of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Coming up in about half an hour, in fact, exactly half an hour, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gadget guy, the Gizwiz. He has some funky gadget, I'm sure, for us. I've been talking to Paul in Los Angeles, who got a new AV receiver, which is a great way to go, by the way. AV receivers allow you to have a variety of different devices plugged into the AV receiver and control them from the AV receiver, all plugged into one TV set. So it's kind of like an HDMI switcher, but it also allows you to control the audio and so forth. Now, the one issue in this case is he doesn't have a powered subwoofer. Most subwoofers these days have their own amplifiers built in. So your new AV receiver just assumes that and gives you a line-level RCA, single RCA jack that plugs into your sub, but it's not what your sub needs. Your sub needs an amplified speaker cable, speaker wire. So what you need to buy is an amp.
I keep telling my girlfriend that.
You can buy a little small amp. It doesn't need to be a very elaborate amp, although you should look at what the power requirements are of a sub. Subs, one of the reasons subs are often powered is because they take a lot of power.
Yeah, she bought me the receiver. She was tired of seeing me pound the other one.
Well, honey, you got me the wrong one. The truth is, you need a better amp, a subwoofer. I would actually just buy a subwoofer, a powered subwoofer.
Okay,
they're not that expensive.
A couple more questions, if I can.
Sure.
Can I use on this 7.1? Because now I see that I'm allowed to have side speakers.
Right.
Can I use my old skinny tower speakers from my old unit?
You can. You can. Let me tell you what our home theater guy, Scott, said, Scott Wilkinson, because I was going to do that. I have lots of little speakers lying around. He said, well, really, ideally, everything's tuned. You want the same speakers. The one can be a different brand, but the seven, if you use all seven, should be from the same brand.
Okay, all my side speakers would be, the rear speakers would be. The only things that I have in front is I have some really big Kenwoods from a stereo unit that I like because they really pound out the sound.
I think it's going to be fine.
Okay, and what size TV should I get? I have, it's 19 feet.
Oh, that's pretty far. That's very far.
Yeah, I only have a 42-inch plasma, and I keep telling my girlfriend, once again, it's too small.
You should get 70 inches at least. In fact, really, if you're almost 20 feet away, you're not going to be able to get a flat panel that's big enough. You're going to have to get a motorized screen.
Oh, like you have.
Like I have. There's a lot of negatives to that. If you can't move the couch closer.
I can switch it around to where it gives me about 12 to 14 feet.
Then you're fine, and 60 inches is fine.
60 inches.
Yeah, 60. 60's, you get to 70, it gets expensive. 70's the biggest you can get in a flat panel that I know of.
Because I love movies, and we play all our game consoles on it.
Oh, yeah, and if you got 7.1 surround sound, you're never going to leave the house again.
Yeah, we don't watch TV or anything like that.
No, so movies and games. Yeah. I'm just going to mention, I don't have a stake in this or anything, but I did buy Emotiva speakers, and now I'm seeing they're having a huge summer sale, and they make speakers for front, side, center, 7.1, everything. And I would look at their subwoofers because they're on sale for about $100 off. A powered subwoofer, rather than going out and getting an amp for existing subwoofer, we'll give you. It'll just be great, and then it'll come right out of that AV receiver.
Okay, that would be perfect.
Yeah, and it'd rumble the heck out of your apartment, much more so than getting a little amplifier for your existing sub. Nowadays, subs. This is probably a fairly old sub. Nowadays, almost all subs I see are powered because they need so much power to move all that air. This small Emotiva, which is $399. Has a 300-watt amplifier for that single channel. So you're not going to be able to... It's going to be probably more expensive to get an amp that has... you want an active sub, a powered sub, a, you know, it does all the crossover automatically and all of that stuff. I think this is probably the best way to go, rather than going out and getting an amp for your existing speakers. Jordan in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. So I have a question for you. My wife has just recently gotten into photography, and I just got her a Canon 60D, and she loves it.
Aren't you but sweet? That's a nice gift.
Well, it was what we call a push present. We just had our first son, so that was her gift.
Yep, yep.
And I got her that. So
that's appropriate. New fathers, you got to remember, a push present, very important.
That's right. But so she basically, she's obviously taking a lot more pictures now, and she's having a tough time. She's got a MacBook Pro, and it's just filling up all of her hard drive. And I know you recommend, obviously, backing up with something like Carbonite, offsite backup, like some sort of a cloud.
Yeah, but she's going to want a local hard drive as well.
Exactly. And we have one, but I was just wondering if there's something like that you recommend, because the cloud stuff, that many pictures, the more
no. Yeah. No, and also it's too far away. You want something that's
right.
When you're talking about backup, there's online, nearline, and offline. Offline backup, which is essentially cloud backup, is hard to get to. It's there for emergencies. You want online or nearline backup if you're a photographer, so that you can quickly get to those pictures. Especially if she's going to be editing them, then you really want online backup. So that's an external drive. I would go to, she said Macintosh, right?
Yeah, and I know I went to Fry's at her Best Buy, and I saw they have Mac has the time capsule
No. That's different. Again, that's more of a backup solution. I would say because she's running out of space on her internal drive, that you want a high speed. Does she have FireWire on that the laptop?
It's the one they took the FireWire off.
Great.
It's the one before this most recent one.
That's USB only.
So. Yeah,
and unfortunately, it's slow USB. They don't even have the new USB 3 yet.
They have a small.
Thunderbolt. Now you can This is what they were hoping, is that people would replace FireWire with Thunderbolt. Nobody in their right mind is doing that for two reasons. One, you have to buy a $50 Thunderbolt cable. And two, the drives themselves are extremely expensive and usually solid state if they're going to take advantage of all that speed. I wouldn't do that.
Right.
Go to MacSales.com.
MacSales.com.
Yeah, it's Otherworld Computing. They only sell Mac stuff. They have lots of external drives.
Okay.
They do have Thunderbolt drives, but that's fast. But we're talking $1,000. I mean, how big was the baby?
Yeah, not that.
Anything under 10 pounds, I think you're done.
Yeah, six and a half.
So yeah. No, I think I think the camera was enough. I would probably just get a USB drive. They're not that slow. And get a big one. Get a terabyte or 2 terabytes. They have very good prices at Otherworld Computing, and that's really what she wants.
And then just pull the pictures off, put it on the hard drive, and then...
Well, what does she use to edit them? iPhoto or Aperture, or what is she?
She uses Photoshop.
Okay. So what I would do is when you import the pictures, I wouldn't even store them on the internal drive. I'd have a fast external drive.
And only use that.
Back up that drive, because that's not a backup.
Right. Okay.
Hey, congratulations, and happy Father's Day, Jordan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a good line. How big was the baby? He got it right away. I amuse myself. I find myself amusing. Benny in Pasadena is next. Hey, Benny. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. I spoke to you last week.
Oh, yeah? What was that about?
Well, it was about the Samsung Galaxy S3, but now I'm looking at the Samsung Galaxy Note.
Oh, you like the big one.
Yeah, what do you think of that? I mean,
I love them both. I have to say, it really depends on what your needs are, what your interests are. I replaced my Galaxy Note with an S3, but remember, I'm a little different. I'm a little unusual because I always want the latest greatest thing, right? And I get a new phone every few months. I still think the Note is fantastic. So here's the difference. Basically, the Note is 5.3 inches, and the Galaxy S3 is 4.8 inches. Some people think that the Note is too big because you can't really use it one-handed. The S3 is just about as big as a phone could be and use it one-handed. The Note, unless you have very big hands to reach your thumb all the way across, you're just not going to do one-handed operations. It's going to be two-handed. Now, one thing the Note has as an advantage is it does have a stylus. So for drawing, for taking notes in handwriting and so forth, the stylus can do some cool things. The Note is the same. Here's an interesting point. The Note is the same resolution. Same number of dots. It's a bigger screen, but they're both 1280 by 720. So you get the same amount of information on the Galaxy S3. The screen is just smaller. Smaller pixels, smaller text.
Right.
You know, you can go and try. You're an AT&T customer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at crossing over because they're the only ones that offer the Note.
Right. So you can go and try a Note today at an AT&T store, and I would take a look at it because I think the Note is definitely not for some people. I fell in love with it. It's a phone and a tablet. You know, it's like a mini tablet. It's like a hybrid. And I like that. I think for reading, for playing games and so forth, it's great. My Note, because I got the International Unlocked version, did update to Ice Cream Sandwich. It is running version 4 of Android, as is the Galaxy S3. I don't know if the AT&T Note is yet Ice Cream Sandwich. I don't know if they've pushed that yet. It's one disadvantage I have, but...
Right. Leo, one more thing. The other thing is we ran out of time. You told me, as far as my laptop, that my computer's saying, try a different drive. It's saying, I don't see a drive, but I'm not really sure what to do in response to that.
Well, how old is the laptop?
It's old. It's like 2004.
Yeah, so it's well out of warranty. Who made it?
Toshiba.
Okay. So what if the drive's dead, what you need to do is get somebody to replace it or try replacing it yourself. Is it easy to get to?
I'm not sure, but I wasn't sure if it was replaceable, but you're saying I can replace it?
Well, I'm not sure. On some notebooks, you can. It's a very easy thing. Look on the bottom of your notebook. You'll see a little porthole with four screws on it. Remove those screws. If you can look, sometimes that's just for RAM. Sometimes it's for the memory and the hard drive. It just depends.
Okay.
I would look into it. But if you don't know what you're doing, I would be careful and I would bring it to a shop. You've got to find somebody in Pasadena. There's got to be somebody around who, you know, they're still around. These shade tree mechanics of computer techs. We've got a couple in town. You could tell that they're old school because they have motherboards in the windows, old cases collecting dust, maybe, you know, stickers on the window that say things like Gateway and E-Machines. They used to be where you'd go to buy a computer. Now they're just kind of lonely. And I bet you if you go in there lugging your Toshiba and say, the drive's dead, that guy will whip out his little screwdriver and he'll get right in there and he could probably fix it. But if you're not a tech person yourself, I'd be a little nervous about opening that thing up. You're going to have to find a drive that is compatible. That's not going to be easy. A machine that old is probably an IDE drive. Good luck finding an IDE drive these days. You probably have to go on eBay. That's why you want to find the shade tree mechanic. The geek who's just hanging out, he's still got modems in the window. You could get a US Robotics 56K modem from this guy. Cheap. That's the guy you want. He probably has a few IDE laptop drives still around, just hanging there. That'd be the best place to go. He's got old motherboards, modems in the window. What else does he have? An Epson dot matrix printer in the back. It goes. Ask Leo. Thanks for the call, Benny. Good luck with that, Toshiba. Once, you know, now this is an interesting point. This Toshiba is 8 years old, and it is repairable. He could get it repaired. I don't know if it's worth repairing, but he could get it repaired. An 8-year-old MacBook Air with Retina display, 8 years from now, I'll be laughing. I'll say, well, you got a nice boat anchor. Nothing you can do. No user serviceable parts inside. And by then, Apple probably wouldn't even fix it. That's what makes me nervous about this new laptop. This is one of the first computers I've seen with built-in obsolescence. We've seen this with phones and tablets. Apple invented that with the phones and the tablets, the iPad. But this is a computer, and there you can't do anything. Only Apple can fix it for a hefty price. Steve, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I am the non-tech guy, and I have an older PC, and I'm trying to load Microsoft Office Windows Home Edition on it.
Okay.
And I put it on my newer computer, no problem. I took it to my office with an older computer. I tried to load it, and I said I needed more memory. I had to get rid of some, make room for it. And so the computer made some room. I put the disk back in the drive, and now the computer doesn't even recognize that there's a disk in the drive.
Well, sounds like you broke it, Steve. I hate to say it.
Well, that is typical. Okay.
It's absolutely impossible for me to diagnose or fix this problem over the phone because I just don't know what went wrong.
Wait, come over to my office if you like.
I'll come right down. I'll be over after the show. Boy, you know, I could probably make, you know, $50 or $60 a day fixing people's computers. I could probably do pretty well. I really ought to consider that as a, you know, just I only work weekends. Like Monday through Friday, I could come to people's houses, fix it. I just don't know what to say, Steve. I think if you could find a shop that I would bring it in, and I can't tell what happened.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Well, no problem. I appreciate your show. It's very, very helpful to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Yeah, some of this stuff, and we're getting a lot today to these tech support calls. I apologize, but you understand my limitations. I am simply sitting in a darkened room all by myself with a microphone and a cup of tea and close my eyes and extend my extrasensory perception as much as I can. I still can't quite see into your computer. I'm working on it. I'll tell you, if I can ever do that, then I got a business. The ESP tech guy. I see into your computer, Jim. Jim in Florida. I think you want to buy a new laptop. Am I correct, sir?
That's true.
Aha! You see? Oh, I also see that I must take a break for commercial. Please stick around. Leo, if I'd only known that. If I could have seen the future, I would have known that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ooh.
All right, Leo, your live read here is not 32.
Popcorn! He was listening. A little hot butter, baby. This is Moog, right? This is a 8-bit Moog synthesizer. Probably the first time a lot of people ever heard of Moog. 8888, Ask Leo. That should be our theme song right there. I like it. It's bouncy, it's poppy, it's upbeat. Maybe mix in some modem sounds and MX-80 printer sounds, and we got it. I love it. Bum, 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 bum. This is good stuff. This is how it used to sound in an office. 8888. All right, enough. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. Last few minutes of the Tech Guy show. Everybody's got a headache now. But kids, that's what computers used to sound like in the good old days. Back when... Oh, we're booting up, and it's time for the Daily Gizwiz. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for the last four decades. He's also a gadget hound. He's, like, totally into this stuff, and he joins us every week. To talk about gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I am well indeed. Good. So it is Father's Day coming up.
Father's Day tomorrow. Do your kids give you Father's Day gifts, or are they beyond that?
You know, they're teenagers now. The gift they give me is leaving the house. You know, I asked my son, I said, well, Father's Day tomorrow, you got anything planned? It's dead silence. I said, you could, let's have dinner. He said, oh, okay. Are you paying? When once they hit the teenage years, you're really just glad that they were kids once. That's all.
Oh, okay.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay. Well, in case you have kids like that and you're saying, oh, we should do something about Father's Day, it's not too late, because we talked about a little gadget on the Weekly Daily Gizwiz last week that is perfect for tomorrow. It's from Foster Grant, and it is their folding magnifiers. They're also sold under the brand.
Your gadget is reading glasses?
Yes, reading glasses.
Reading. Don't you need a prescription for that?
You do not need a prescription for Foster Grant magnifiers.
No, you do not.
That's the beauty of that.
That is exactly right. You just need to know the magnification, okay? So they come in 1.5 and 2 and 2.5. But what's neat is that they fold up small enough so that they're about the size of like a cigarette lighter.
See, that's kind of cool. So you can keep that in your pocket.
You keep that in your pocket. Yeah. And what's also nice about them is a lot of the folding magnifiers have a little slit of glass for you to look through.
Right.
And these have a really nice reading panel. And also the little temples are telescoping, so they slide out and they fit nicely over the ears and under 25
But where
bucks.
Do you put the batteries, or does it plug in?
Yeah. The LEDs are optional.
Oh, okay.
So the neat thing is pretty much any drugstore, so... You still have like 24 hours to shop, assuming you're not going to give Dad his gift till tomorrow at dinner time. You can still run out and get these guys.
That's a sign. I'll tell you, a sign I'm getting old. I went to a retreat a few weeks ago, and they very thoughtfully put reading glasses on all the tables because nobody ever remembers.
Oh, how clever!
They're readers, right? It's the new thing as we baby boomers age.
Yeah.
Readers
well, you know,
on
they,
every
they
table.
Could just put a big magnifier in front of the podium and save everybody. No one has to.
Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz, and that's where you can find out about all his gadgets. Some of them actually do have batteries installed.
Yeah, most.
And you could play that great game, What the Heck Is It? Just click that big What the Heck Is It button, and here's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by Mad's maddest writer. It'll be the new July-August issue of Mad with Spider Newman on the front.
Yep. What me, Webby?
That's actually a great cover. I love that. But you have to decide what this is, and I can't quite figure that out. But I have an idea. I'm going to submit. By the way, you should know that there are 12 copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, 24 for the best wrong answer. So really, there's no need to be accurate with this.
Yeah, and you know, you can send them in under your own name. I'm tired of those ball sitter.
Really? You can. You kind of knew that was me all along. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Fez wearer. Geek
Brickhouse
106.
Owner.
Yeah,
very thin disguise.
I never won, so I don't know what you're worried about. What the Heck Is It is at gizwiz.biz. Dick, stick around. We are going to do our weekly daily Gizwiz podcast.
Yes, sir. I'll be here.
All right. Don't go anywhere. Okay. Now, Jim in Florida. Sorry I had to put you on hold. Welcome back, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, Jim, you were interested in buying a laptop.
Yes. I'd like to know a brand, model, power, and where to buy it.
You just want me to tell you everything. You don't want to do any research. You want me to tell you what to get.
Well, I've been doing some research online, and it's all so ambiguous.
I know. Let me ask you a little bit about what you're going to use this for.
I'm starting an internet business next week where I'm going to be selling products online and having them direct ship from a factory.
Okay.
And I expect in 2 years to have about 30 transactions a day. And I'd like to record the transactions because I'd heard a survey Starbucks did on the radio where they said that 70% of their business was generated by 20% of their customers.
Isn't that interesting? I believe that. I think that's probably true for all business. Customers. Yeah. This is smart. It's called CRM, or Customer Relationship Management. And increasingly, this is the key to success in business. Well, let me recommend, it sounds like you're going to use a Windows laptop. There are a couple of names I really like. We buy all ours from Dell here at the office, but I think Dell is good. But I think the best Windows laptops really are made by a company called Lenovo, L-E-N-O-V-O. Used to be IBM. They sold it to a Chinese company called Lenovo, but they've kept the tradition alive with the ThinkPad, and they make excellent laptop computers. Now, since it sounds like most of the time you're going to be sitting at a desk, portability is not absolutely key. You don't need what they call the ultrabooks. Those are extremely light but a little underpowered. I think if you want the most power, you'll go for their T-Series. That's the highest performance laptops. By the way, most of these are somewhat under $1,000. You might want to go, if you want more lightweight, with the X-Series. Both of these are excellent laptops. Lenovo, I think, makes a very good brand. Hey, that's it for me. Out of time, but I'll be back next time. I hope you'll join me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Yeah, Alienware. He should get a gaming PC because that's the best kind of PC for customer relationship management. Hey, you want to play Diablo? Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.